Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable and non-taxable parts? Talk to the 401k rollover experts at KPP Financial. They'll help you make the best possible choices. Just click on Contact Steve or Justin and type 401k rollover on investtalk.com. Now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. It is August 24th, 2016, and we're here every day, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time, to be a source of answers for you, hopefully, and give you some perspective, hopefully, and, you know, a perspective from a registered investment advisor, which is what I am and which Justin is. And, of course, that's my day job, being an RIA. And I enjoy talking shop and encourage you to bring your information to me, you know, to talk about whatever's on your mind. You know, it's got to be about money. It's got to be about economics. It's got to be about something financial. Okay, and of course, we practice independent thinking. We don't want to go with the crowd all the time. We don't want to look at the financial media and just agree with them. They're wrong way too much. Matter of fact, that's one of my talking points today about listening to experts and how they're always wrong. And I wrote that in my book a number of years ago when I wrote it. Experts are always wrong, and it's a good lesson to learn. Now, one mistake that's pretty common for beginners is that when they analyze a stock, they don't look at the big picture. When investing in a company, there are a bunch of factors that you need to consider. But people tend just to focus on just one thing that they like, that they think is going to be the right thing to focus on. And as they look at the company, they don't put equal weight on all the other factors. You really got to be careful of that. Now, some of the questions you should ask yourself: what kind of company is this? Is it a growth stock? Is it a steady dividend payer? Is it a blue chip core holding? Is there much upside potential? And you might want to ask, how might this stock fit in your portfolio and in your risk tolerance profile? Remember, growth names have a much higher degree of volatility than blue chip names. And what type of products or services do they sell? Is their business viable long term? And how susceptible are they to competition? What kind of trends exist in their industry? How much correlation does the business have to the economic cycle? You've heard me say, well, this is a cyclical stock, meaning it's attached to economic cycle. It goes up and down with the economic cycle. What type of loss are you willing to take on this particular investment? Do you think about those things? Do you write it down so that you make sure you follow it and you don't change your mind as time goes on? Answering these kind of questions should go a long way to assessing the prospects of the investment you're thinking about. The key is to be honest. Don't be biased because you like it. Be honest with yourself. Recognize the downside. Whenever you like a stock, what you immediately should do, I really like this stock. What you immediately should do is go find reasons not to like it. Since I like it, I got to find what's wrong with it. Kind of be mentally contrarian about the stock that you automatically like because you heard a news or someone you should automatically dislike it because you like it. I know that sounds totally wrong or totally stupid, but it's true. If you find yourself gravitating to a position because you just like the company, it sounds good, it's in a great industry, I like what it's doing, I like the industry it's in, you should immediately look for the cracks. What's wrong with it? And put some weight on that to balance out your thinking. That's what you should do. 888-99-CHART. I want to talk about what's on your mind, not what's on my mind. So give me a call. We'll try to answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, it's Jamie, loyal listener from Boston, calling in regarding Monday's show. There was some information about when you cannot take out tax-free money you've put in as a contribution to the Roth IRA. I was left scrambling after the show to get my IRS Pub 590. You do not include in gross income qualified distributions or distributions that are a return on your regular contributions from your Roth IRA. Just wanted to see if this could get addressed on the show. Thanks.
And he's exactly right. Justin was wrong. If I don't remember, I didn't listen to exactly what he said, but if you, it's a Roth. We're talking about Roth IRAs. So the money you put in a Roth, you can take out without penalty. That distribution, you can take a distribution without any penalty or tax. Remember, you're already taxed when you put it in. It's the growth that you can't touch till retirement age. So he's exactly right. Okay, so be very attention. Before you take money out of your Roth or your regular IRA, check with your accountant. Don't listen to people on the radio. My job is not taxes. Our job is to manage money. So we just know about taxes a lot because we deal with them a lot, but we're not the expert on that. So make sure you hire your expert, okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what happened in the market today? We're down. Dow was down 66 points. The NASDAQ down 42, and the S&P down 11. The market has been very, very low volatility for quite some time, and this too will end. It doesn't stay that way. Let's talk to Larry in Temecula. How you doing, Larry?
Fine, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm calling about Donnelley and Sons. RRD is the stock symbol.
Okay.
Let's see what your take is on that.
Was that the old Yellow Pages company?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, provides printing, direct mail, financial printing, print fulfillment, and other print services to various industries. It kind of had to get away from the Yellow Pages. Younger generation, Larry, doesn't even know what I'm talking about when I say the Yellow Pages. You know that, right?
Right.
And then, what? What are they talking about? Anyways, let's take a look at the numbers. They make money. They've always made money, which is really, really good, and it's made money consistently. In other words, between $1.55 and $1.80 in the last 8 years per year. That's how much they make. There's no growth in their earnings. There's no shrinkage in their earnings. They're just steady. So you buy this for the dividend. The dividend is about 6%, which is pretty darn good. It's a $17 stock paying and they're going to earn $1.68 a share next year, so they can easily afford that dividend next year. It's very doable for them. And so what you want to do, Larry, is buy this on a dip. When you get a dip, you buy it. Now, it spiked up to $19.50 a share in mid-July. Now it's at $17.21. This looks like good support area, Larry, right where it is, $17, $17.50, somewhere in that range. So you could buy. I might suggest like a half a position right now, Larry. And then see if it pulls the bound further if we get a correction sometime before the before the holiday season. It's pretty common that we do. May not, but it's pretty common.
Actually, I bought this back in March.
Oh, okay. Well, then great. I would not get rid of it. You bought it at a good point. Okay.
Great.
I would just hold on to it because that dividend is solid as rock, and you're probably getting a little bit more than 6%.
I am. Just a tad more. Thank you,
yeah.
Steve. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks, Larry. Good for the good call. It's a very steady company. It's only $3.6 billion. It's not a big company, but their earnings are so steady. Return on equity is very high. You might have a little concern with the debt, but they can easily afford that. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good. Thank you, Steve.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Would you repeat that again? You kind of went out.
The security ABX.
Okay. You want to buy it, sell it, give it away?
Yeah, I'm thinking about picking it up. It's dropped a little bit, and I'm not sure what would be a good price to get in.
I kind of like your idea of picking it up, really, Mike, if you want to know the truth. ABX, everybody, is Barrick Gold Corporation. And, of course, I'm probably biased because we own this. And we bought this, sometime late last year. We sold half of it when it really got high, and we're holding on to the other half. We're actually going to start buying it back if it gets a little bit weaker than this. A really strong support area is right around $17 a share. It's at $18.17. It's fallen from around $22, $23 to $18. It had a pretty big down day today, almost 10%. I think you're looking at it correctly as a possible buying opportunity. It has risen from, what, $6 or so at the beginning of the year, $7 or so, and to 21. I mean, come on. You think it's not going to give some of that back? Of course it will. So now it's giving someone a back. So, Mike, wait till it settles down. Let's let it trade sideways for a few days or a week or so, and then pick it up. Don't try to pick it up while it's still falling, and it's still falling. This might have been, this could easily be the exhaustive sell-off, because it sold off sharply today on high volume, and only because there was no real reason. There was no nothing disappointing sales or anything like that. No, not with the, no. So it was just a sell-off because it was overbought, and this might be the exhaustive sell-off. But let's wait a few days and see if it turns sideways on you, then pick it up, Mike. I would. ABX, everybody.
Okay, great.
Okay, Barrick Gold. Right. You know, everybody, I tell everybody, well, wait for a sell-off, pick it up when it's, you know, wait for a correction. Well, this is gold, gold mining company. This is a correction it's having. All the gold companies are, if you look at them, they all are, you know, giving a little bit back. Okay, now all those people that wanted to buy them, this is where you buy them. You don't buy them, you don't try to buy the, a lot of people buy when everything has been going good for a long time. They chase performance. Let it come back to you. Let it come back to you. Don't chase the performance. And if you miss it, you miss it. Because investing is a very personal exercise, it's good to get to know yourself. Every choice you make, investing your own money, carries some degree of risk with it. So what you need to do is discover just how much risk you're really comfortable with. And you can do that by using our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It's the first step anyways. It's a quick quiz, just a few questions about what you like, you know, what kind of gains or losses you're willing to take. That's all it is. It's free on investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab. 88.99 chart, you know, an extended flood of money into these investments raise the risk that they're overvalued. So that's going to be one of our talking points. Are the safe havens still safe? Are they safe anymore? That's going to be one of our main talking points, hopefully, today. The world economy. What's happening in the world economy? What happened in specifically world trade? What's going on with world trade? And what can we decipher from it? Existing home sales were out today. Now, we had new home sales out recently, but today it was existing home sales. Did you see what the numbers were? And I talk about home sales a lot when the numbers come out because everybody has a house. Most people have a house. It's a very important part of our perception of wealth, our personal perception of wealth. And what happened to the doom and gloom of the Brexit? Do you remember the economists and how they were saying, oh my God, the majority of them, vast majority, doom and gloom from Britain leaving the EU. So what happened to that? We're starting to get some economic numbers from the EU and from Britain after this exit. What are those numbers? These economists were, well, we're going to talk about that. And this is part of my ongoing effort to open your eyes that the experts are often a lot. Most of the time, they're wrong. They're wrong most of the time. That's why you need independent thinking. Don't go with the crowd. Think independently. InvestTalk is better when you get involved, not just me. So join the discussion. 888-99-CHART. Our listen line is always open. When we come back, we'll talk with Judy in the Bay Area about PayPal. Then maybe we'll talk to you. Or we're going to go talk to Judy in the Bay Area. How you doing, Judy?
Hi. Thank you, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Okay, so I have a question regarding the stock ticker. It's called PayPal.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, PayPal is a new company. So I just like to know, is it still worthy to hold PayPal stock for a long term or not? If not, when is the best price to sell it? Because right now I have PayPal stock.
Okay. It's hard to know. PayPal Holdings, everybody, provides digital mobile payments on behalf of consumers and merchants worldwide. It's hard to know because that is a very, very high competitive area in banking these days. Think about Every company out there trying to do Square, you have Square with that little Square thing that you run credit cards. You have Apple trying to use its pay systems. And PayPal, it's a big company, $45 billion. It's big. And they're growing their earnings by 15, 16%. And they're growing their sales 15 to 20% a quarter, more closer to 15 now. So they're growing very fast. This whole area of electronic payments and credit card verifications and all that stuff is a hot growth area. And I can't tell you who's going to be the winner, Judy. I can't tell you that I can't say that PayPal is going to be one of the big winners. I think they have a very good shot at it because they're pretty hefty. And they've been buying a lot of the smaller competitors, you know, gathering more technology to them. To PayPal, put it in their own. So there's a lot of good things going on with PayPal, but it's not a cheap stock either. It's selling for about 25 PE ratio, growing about 15% or so sales and earnings. So it's not inexpensive. Is it a long-term hold? I would say at this point I couldn't tell you if it would be a long-term hold. It wouldn't be in my mind. It's not blue chip or anything like that yet. Because of the competitive area that it's in. I would rather see you buy it in the low 30s if you're going to buy it. If you already own it, I just hold it. There's absolutely no reason to sell it. There's not, because it's still growing.
Okay, so
nice.
You would suggest me don't sell it as in loose,
no,
right?
Yeah, I would not. I would not sell at this point. It looks, it's growing steadily. It has been growing very steadily for a long time, and it looks like the future is pretty good for them. The only worry they have is, can they beat up the competition? They might buy the competition. What they've been doing is buying smaller companies that could hurt their margins and therefore adding more heft to themselves. So I kind of like that at this stage of this new industry that's been growing very fast. Thanks for the call, Judy. I appreciate it. PayPal, PYPL is the symbol, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to discuss out there? How about we talk about safe haven investing? People have been moving to safe haven investing now for several years. And is it time to keep moving into that area? And I'm going to tell you, that area is getting very, very expensive. When I say that area, what am I talking about? I'm talking about dividend-paying stocks. Not just any dividend-paying stocks. I'm talking about dividend-paying stocks because you still can find some good deals, but you have to look pretty hard. Dividend-paying stocks, treasuries, and, how low? Do you know that 10-year treasuries last year were giving you a yield of 2.2% and 10-year treasuries this year is giving you 1.5% yield per year? It's how much money you're going to make. And you'll say, well, that's not very much, but it's a heck of a lot more than negative yield coming out of Germany and Japan. That's one of the reasons why people have been running into them and driving down our yields. The demand. And can they drive them down further? Yes, they can. Why can't they drive them down to negative like they are in Europe? That can happen. The Fed may not want it to happen, but they're not raising rates anytime either. Here we are in August, and they haven't raised rates one time. Remember, beginning of this year, they were going to raise rates, about four times. That was their prediction from the Fed. About four times. Not once. Now you're starting to hear them talking about it again, that because our economic numbers are looking pretty good, but world growth doesn't look good at all, and they do pay attention. So running to the treasuries, what is interesting is people used to invest in U.S. treasuries because of the yields. Now a lot of people are buying U.S. treasury looking for growth because as the yields go down, the value of a 10-year treasury goes up. And could it go down lower? As I said, yes, it can. It can, especially if the economy goes into recession or people get frightened. Heck yeah, it can. The Fed has no room. Let's say we start to get weaker in our economy. What does the Fed do? when the economy gets weak. They lower interest rates to try to spark economy. If you're already this low, how low can you give them? And if you get, go, and if you go lower, doesn't that push everything into negative territory? Yes, it does. Now, do you know why it goes negative, right? You do know why it does that. Because people, institutions are forced to buy treasuries. Forced. They have to buy them. Have to, even if they are negative. We're open to your money questions and comments. 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through. You can do it right now.
Our podcast will continue next. No matter where you live in the U.S., Steve can review your retirement portfolio. Do you feel like you have a workable plan? Or is your portfolio kind of a hodgepodge that sort of built itself over the years? You may be leaving money on the table or in someone else's pocket. Request a review. Steve does these by Skype or telephone, so it doesn't matter where you live in the U.S. To line it up, start on investtalk.com and then click on the Invest Talk tab, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. We continue now with this Wednesday, August 24th, Invest Talk. If you aren't saving enough money or always receive a tax refund, you may need an advisor. Five signs you need an investment advisor. That's next time, but Steve's ready to answer any money question right now. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him from anywhere in the U.S.
Hello, Justin and Steve. This is Raphael from Jersey. Love the show. My question today is about Gilead Sciences, GILD. I'm looking at this thing. I do own it. I've had it for a couple years. My point I'm making is that technically on a chart, it looks like we've reached a point where it's starting to steer through a base, almost a flat base, a rounding out. There's some previous support around here back in July, I believe, or June. I'm thinking a $106 billion market cap and the free cash flow this company generates. And the short ratio, I believe, is now under 2%. With the constant buybacks and the dividend of 2.3%, this is almost like an Apple play at this point. I don't see much downside here. And I wanted to get your guys' impression on that. And again, I love the show. Thank you.
And he's right. In many aspects, this Gilead, G-I-L-D Sciences, develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, cardiovascular, HIV diseases. They're going to make $11.78 a share this year after $12.61 last year. But then they're going to make $11.69 next year, down a little bit less. I mean, down a little bit more than it is this year. But $11.69 for an $80 stock is really inexpensive, right? I mean, this is the beauty. Its 5-year PE range is 6 to 37, and it's at 6. Okay, the only issue you have is sales have been weakening. They're no longer growing, and that's why. Because if you go four quarters ago, the sales were growing 37%. This most recent quarter, sales shrank 6%. There's why the stock has been beaten up from $108 down to $80. Right now, it's a value play. Okay, it's value. Right now, it's a value play. And you're right, it is basing. It fell in late June, then retested that low here recently a few weeks ago, and it's starting to come off of that low. So I think this looks like a good buy point, and you can use the most recent low as your get out if it happens to fall. One of the issues you didn't mention about Gilead is the politics behind the drugs that they sell. You got to look at the politics. How many drugs do they have? There's a couple of big drugs they have, one in particular, and there's a lot of noise about it, and that's one of the reasons why I got beat up so much, because they were charging so much money for that drug. And then it got a bad taste in investors' mouth about what they were doing. Not that they were doing anything wrong. They weren't. There's nothing illegal or anything. Just they were making a lot of money off of sick people. But isn't that true for all drug companies? I'm just saying. But right now it looks at a very extreme low value. So Gilead, G-I-L-D. I kind of like it. World economy, what's going on? Well, world trade fell sharply in the second quarter. This has just been reported. After a flat first quarter, world trade. It fell most in the EU, 1.8%. And then in Japan, 1.6%. And then in U.S., 0.6%. This is world trade. The only reason why it's not affecting us as much as other places is because our economy is pretty self-sufficient compared to other economies. We have a lot of engines of growth. Japan does not. Their exports are their engine of growth, right? And Europe exports a lot, especially out of Germany, the largest economy. So if the entire world growth is shrank, if the entire world growth shrank sharply in the second quarter, this is why all those economies are having trouble. It's pretty easy. And then you add on top of that a growing resistance to world trade in countries like the United States. Think about the politics involved here. The United States, Europe, Japan, everybody is kind of pulling in their horns. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want a free trade. They think it's unfair trade. And you could say it's unfair or fair. I'm not trying to make a political judgment here. All I'm saying is that's what the feeling is. Therefore, it hurts world growth. World trade has sharply fallen, and there's a headwind there where people, you know, in various countries, not just here in the United States, it's all over the place, that, you know, they feel world trade is hurting them instead of helping them. When, in fact, world trade does help the entire world, just so you know. I don't care what the politicians say. It does help. World trade is a good thing, not a bad thing. Now, of course, you all want fair trade. That's the deal. But world trade is a good thing for everybody. But this is what's happening, and this is why one of the reasons a lot of companies dependent on exports are having such a heck of a time, and why they want to keep their currencies low and keep driving them lower. They want to export. But when everybody's doing it, it's not going to work, is it? This hasn't worked. It's not working. Driving your currency lower is not working. So who knows? 888-99-CHART. Let's also try to answer a question via our text message. Is it wise to keep $10,000 in savings, or should I put half of that into a mutual funds account or some other type of investment? Okay, here's a rule of thumb. You should keep cash. About 3 to 6 months of your monthly expense should be in cash, very liquid, available for you to use anytime in case of emergencies. 3 to 6 months. If you're self-employed, it can be longer. If you have a very secure job, then it could be 3 months. If you have a so-so secure job, 6 months. This is the rule of thumb that's out there that I like to follow. So is it wise to keep $10,000 in savings? Well, how much money, what is your monthly expenses? Let's say you spend $5,000 a month. You should have about $15,000 at the minimum in liquid cash in a savings account. Art, Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've got a question on if you're a beneficiary on a trust and the person passes, do you have to pay tax on the I'm talking about real property. If like a home gets sold, will you get taxed like on that money that you get?
Okay, let's talk about that. Okay, if you're a beneficiary of somebody else's trust and that person dies, is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay, and that person has property and you sell right. that property and you get the you get the proceeds.
Right.
Do you have... Okay, I'm not a tax expert, but when you inherit a piece of property or stocks or bonds, you get what's called a stepped-up value of those things. So the day the person died is the value that you get on that property. So now if you sell that property and it's worth about, you sold it about the same time, you won't have to pay any capital gains tax at all. Well, let's say they died 2 years ago and the property went up 30% from 2 years ago. Then you would have a 30% gain in profits, and you'd have to pay capital gains tax on the increase in value from the time of their death, the time that you actually sold that property and got the proceeds.
Oh, okay. I guess along the same lines, the initial, like, let's say you sold the property right close to the death.
Yes.
Would you have to add that inheritance to your income or anything like that, or can you just take the proceeds and just put it in? You know,
now remember, you're talking to a money manager, not a tax guy. Okay, Art. You really need to run that by a CPA type of guy. But if you inherit money, there is a certain amount per annual. There's a certain amount you can inherit without having to pay any taxes. And I don't. I don't know. Is this from a relative or is this from somebody else? Is it relative?
Well, it would be, yes.
Okay, so
actually, I'm just looking down the road.
There's rules that you won't have to pay a lot of tax depending on how much it is. You can inherit. Someone can inherit. I think it was $5 million in a lifetime. I don't know. There's rules. Okay, Art. I'm not an expert on it. There's rules that you need to talk to a CPA.
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Art. Yeah, it's just not my area, taxes and that. You know, I get involved a little bit, but, you know, I picked up the phone and called my CPA today about a tax question. So that's how I do it. I just don't rely on myself. I call my own CPA. Okay, they're supposed to be the experts. I am not. We are money managers. We manage people's portfolios for them. Taxes is kind of, you know, not our area. If you live in Northern California, I'll be in San Jose August 31st for individual retirement reviews. Again, San Jose, August 31st. Now, these are informal conversations. Before the hour is over, I'm going to have a good understanding of your goals and your needs and what you have and how much assets you have and what your 401k is like and what you're trying to do. And we'll hopefully give you a plan. That's hopefully what we'll do. And, of course, if you want us to manage your money, I would love to do that. But that's not the main topic of this discussion. The main topic is where are you in your financial life and how can we get you to the point where you can be secure. To schedule your hour meeting with me, well, all you do is go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab or call 800, or let me rephrase that, call 888-99-CHART and then follow the prompts.
What's the best indicator of a stock that's going to outperform the market in the next year? Find one that is actually outperforming the market right now. How do you find the high flyers of the future? Talk to Steve about it. Call in at 888-99-CHART, or you can send him a note. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com.
Hi, I was calling in regards to Office Depot, ODP. A few weeks ago, they reported 3 cents on the quarter. It's a $1.9 billion company, so it looks like they're barely making profit, you know, and they're somehow hanging around. But I think the price is kind of good. It's dropped a good bit on the past year or so. So I really want to see if you thought that they're going to last much longer with obviously competing against the ever-growing Amazon and the new powerhouse of combo Walmart and Jet.com. And I want to see if you think they'll last much longer or will they just get overtaken by the adaptive competitors. Thank you. Have a great day.
Yeah, Office Depot, ODP. Remember they wanted to do a tie-up with the other major office company? What was that? Not Office Depot, but Staples. And then the government said, no, you can't do that. You'd be unfair competition. This is the stupidity of the government. Unfair competition? Are you kidding me? You know how many competitors are out there? See, they don't even think about it. Look, you got competitors, Costco, Walmart, you know, all the other big stores, there's lots of competition out there. And so what's happening now that these two companies, Office Depot and Staples, have to make it on their own, they're going to have a hell of a time because they're competing. They wanted to get some heft by combining, and that would help them compete. But, of course, the government doesn't like that. They're not very smart there. ODP, they're going to make 39 cents a share this year, 44 cents a next share. Last year they made 41. They've turned around. They were losing money a few years ago, and they've turned it around, so good for them. But sales are still shrinking, you know, single digits, 6 to 9% per quarter. The stock is at $3.62. So based on a 44 cent earnings per share, you're looking at a stock that's like a 9, 10 PE, and that's the lowest PE it's had in the last 5 years, 9. Now, don't get excited about it because, you know, he's exactly right. Is this company going to hang around? Can they survive? They have a decent amount of debt. Cash flow is okay. It's not a company I'd be buying because I think the internet is going to destroy it. Crave destruction. Amazon, you can buy all your office goods and I'll be there the next day. It's just there's not going to be a lot of, just don't think it's going to be around forever. Don't. Let's go to Gary in San Jose. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
You talking about safe havens earlier. I had a question about gold, more specifically about Barrick, ABX. But my question with gold was, I keep hearing about the Jackson Hole convention going on with the Feds, and Yellen's expected to be rather dovish. And if the rates do go up, the market's not really pricing in. I think it's like 28% for end of September, and it's more like 50-50 at the end of the year. But why is gold just falling like crazy if there isn't going to be a rate hike till the end of the year?
Well, it might be that people are anticipating that the rate hike's coming, and that they're remember, everybody looks forward, okay, Gary? Everybody looks at the future and makes decisions today. They don't want to be the last ones out if that's what they think they should be. My worry, though, is not that the gold will go down when they raise rates. The gold will go up. Why am I even saying that? Well, because look what happened the last time they raised rates. They raised rates in the end of December. Remember that? What did gold do?
Yeah.
It went straight up. And the market went straight down. So if they raise rates, I'm not predicting it happen to do the same thing, but I don't think anybody can tell you that gold's going to go down if they raise interest rates. Usually, you would think if they raise interest rates, that would make the dollar stronger. If the dollar's stronger, gold will be weaker. I mean, that's the usual story. But it didn't happen last time.
Right.
Didn't happen in December and January when they raised the rates. So, I don't know. I think it's a coin toss of whether it will go up or down. I think gold actually is a good place to be at this point, to have some of the position. I'm not a big gold person, but having some of it. 888-99-CHART, our anytime number. If you can get through, this is the time to do it. We only have another section left. Give me a call. We're going to talk to Jason in Sunnyvale. How you doing, Jason? Jason, are you there? I lost Jason? Oh, that's not good. Existing home sales fell 3.2% for July. And remember, we just talked about the other day about new home sales, which went up sharply. This is existing home sales that fell 3.2% for July. It was expected to be higher, not lower. But what is the reason? So that's some things you got to look at as a cause of this. And there was a lot, it was lean inventory was one of the problems, and of course, high prices. There was even a report out there that homeowners are so busy refinancing that real estate appraisers couldn't get to the existing homes being sold. But that's probably a minor factor. I mean, prices did go up. The median price was $244,100, and that's up 5.3% from a year ago, year over year. Okay, but inventory is very, very low. It's still low, and maybe that's what drove people to new homes. And new homes inventory is not that high either. So it's a supply demand, and right now there's pretty good demand with the very low interest rates. And you know, I don't think this was a indication that, oh, we're having trouble in the housing problem. I think it's more of an indication that housing is pretty healthy right now. Healthy. Even though it's down 3.2% from the prior month. But got to remember, do you remember the prior month? That was a multi-year high. So, you know, it's not, I don't think there's anything unexpected. Jason is back, so we're going to talk to Jason. How are you doing, Jason?
Hi, doing good. How are you, Steve?
Thank you. Thank you for calling back.
I just wanted your opinion on stock symbol M as in Monk, N as in Nancy, K as in Kite. Just wanted to know where do you think the stock might go in the next maybe few months or so, or 6 months?
Okay, this is Millencroft PLC. It is an Ireland company. It develops generic and branded pharmaceuticals and active pharmaceutical ingredients to treat pain and related conditions. I kind of like the area it's in, the generic and branded pharmaceutical area. I do like it. It has very strong earnings, going to be up 18% this year, another up 6% next year. Sales are up between 11 and 20% quarter after quarter, the last three or four quarters. Very good numbers. And the reason why the stock fell from $120 down to, $50, $60 is because sales used to be 60, 70, 80% and then fell to 30, then 19, then 12, now 11% in the last three or four quarters. So investors, of course, you know how they are. You know, sales are falling and got overpriced. Now it's underpriced. Even though it's spiked up from $55 to $80, it's still underpriced. It's going to make $9.20 next year, and it's a $79 stock. I mean, that's what, 8 PE? That's fairly low. Return on equity is 17%, which is pretty good. Very high. I like that. A little concerned about the debt, but not concerned enough to bother me. It doesn't pay a dividend. My gut reaction, just on the quick look here, Jason, is in 6 months to a year, it's going to be higher. The price will be higher. It should be higher. It should be about an $80 to maybe $90 stock easily.
Okay.
Easily.
Great.
Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Appreciate it. And I think my high mark would be about 110, 120. That'd be my high mark on this stock. But you know what? We'll be going to recession. If we do, everything gets pulled down. Everything does. But I don't think so. It looks pretty healthy. Okay, what happened to the doom and gloom of the Brexit? Remember, every economist out there, well, not everyone, but the majority of them, predicted a great recession for Britain and economic hard times for the EU. Well, we just recently, this week, start getting economic numbers out of the EU and out of Britain, and guess what? Things look pretty much the same they were. Nothing great. But no disaster, no fall, no unemployment rate, no inflation, no great plunge in employment, nothing. Experts are often wrong. Our time is up. A reminder, you can reach me directly with a personal money question, or maybe you'd like to know more about my retirement reviews. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. Maybe you have a question about our portfolio reviews, your message, or your question will come straight to me. Just send me an email, and I'll answer it. All you do is go to InvestTalk.com, click on Contact Steve. Remember, I'll be in San Jose August 31st. Set up your appointment. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. I hope you meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.